This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Salut tous mes belles gays et mes beaux lesos, c'est Matthew Mitchum et vous écoutez à Joy 94.9.
And welcome to Been There, Done That on Joy 94.9. Croaky Chris here. And who else have I got in the studio
well,
with
you've
me?
Well, you've got Gordon, but you were croaky last week too, weren't you?
I know.
Oh, what, a little frog in the throat, was it?
Oh, I think he's been having some tadpoles or something. And Philip,
and
what's
I'm
your
Bill,
diagnosis?
And haven't you croaked yet? Or hasn't your croak croaked?
Yes.
Indeed. Thank you very much. Welcome to Been There, Done That, Joy's program that lives up to its name.
Yeah, because most of us have been there and done that, haven't we?
We don't always admit to it.
No, but we don't, no, but we can talk about it because we have been there in lots of cases.
Well, if not, we read up about it, even if it's ever so briefly sometimes.
But we do extrapolate a little.
And we can tell a really good story.
Yes, that's right.
Doesn't have to be true.
Just have a little bit of truth in it. No, it could be fake news, like somebody that's fond of saying the word.
He didn't invent that term, though.
Didn't he? Oh, no. Right. Was that from The Simpsons, was it?
No, it was a more legitimate source, but right. He's used it to his advantage.
Oh, yes, has he ever.
So one of the newspapers overseas has decided to have boxes explaining each of his expressions, his phrasings, to interpret them and to comment about their appropriateness or the truth of them. So I just wonder how long before that masthead is going to be called fake news.
I would think so, very quickly. Perhaps not by him, but by somebody in his coterie.
We're going to be talking about things happening locally, nearby in Indonesia, a little bit later on, maybe. Over in Europe, this thing's been happening.
Oh, they have been.
In a gay way. Mm. And that's basically the theme of our show, is to explore our own existence in this world.
We are here, and we've been here for a hell of a long time. So we've always been part of history,
mean,
I think.
You mean we as a human race?
No,
or
we as the gay community. We've been here for thousands of years because we have to have been, because otherwise we wouldn't have been mentioned in the Old Testament, would we?
Well, that's right.
You know, so we've got to be here for thousands of years. So, and we're not going away.
Funny about that.
We do like to be written about.
But locally, what has happened this last weekend, there was that great announcement by the Uniting Church.
Yes, it was a wonderful, wonderful announcement that they would allow gay marriages in the church, as long as the pastor, the relevant pastor, whether they would be willing to do it. The minister would be willing to marry a couple of out and proud gays and lesbians.
Yes, you're thinking of Bolognese.
Am I?
Yes, you put that on your pastor.
I was all right.
Thank you, Philip.
Thank you, Philip. Yeah, but it was very interesting that they're going to write a completely new
order of service
for a gay community.
In other words, they're going to use respectful language. You dumbos.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you'd hear Bill Smith. You take this man.
What?
What? Why are you standing there?
But I just go back to that first marriage ceremony that was referred to in the press once it became legal, and it was the applause by the people in the church at that time when they used for the first time, without going back to the old wording, this man and this woman.
Yeah, they said this couple or something. Yes. Like that. Yes. Which
and
was
hooray,
and they clapped and applauded. Yes, it was very, very good. And so it should be. Look, but then again, we're lucky really here in Australia, because at the moment over in America, they could be bringing in a very, very conservative member into the Supreme Court who will be reviewing again the same-sex marriage laws in America. So the gay people in America are going to be having to look out for themselves, I think, too, as well. Although they are protesting about the naming of this man.
Yeah, that's a big problem with their court system, is that the sitting president gets to nominate the replacement judges. And
the bloke that he's nominated could be there for 40 years or more.
Well, they're generally pretty old when they start.
Yeah, well, he's only in his 40s, this young bloke, so yeah. So
I think it's bold that the Uniting Church has actually decided that they can go against the grain, as it were, of the other major churches,
yes,
and show them the way, show them that it is possible.
But Chris, I think you'll find that the Uniting Church have been very, very forward in lots of aspects of religious life.
Mm.
They've been more free to think about what they would like to do in relation to different things that to what the other more rigid church principles are.
Were they uniting the Anglican and the Presbyterian?
No, it was Presbyterian, Methodist.
And Uniting Church.
Yeah.
There were three churches that were of a similar system.
Only the progressive ones, because there are still Presbyterian churches.
Yeah, there were some of the churches didn't want to break. If they didn't want to join the union of the Uniting Church, they could stay as a Presbyterian church if they wanted to.
So in a sense, the only church that was ever likely to make this change would be the Uniting Church.
Yes. Although you'd never know, they may finally get around to it in the Anglican Church, or if they get enough people of sense. It'll never happen in the Catholic Church. They will always be against it. But anyhow,
they have such a problem with reality, those people.
Yeah, and how many people do they represent anyway?
Yeah.
It's a proportion of the community.
Mm.
Well, that brings us to Israel and the situation that's arisen there. Apparently, a bill has been passed in the state parliament, the Knesset, which excludes LGBTI couples from surrogacy, birth by surrogacy.
Yeah. Does it exclude them from IVF treatment as well, or is it just the surrogacy? Because I didn't read whether anywhere in there where it sort of said IVF treatment, which is another totally different thing, of course.
Well, that's right, and perhaps there is some leeway.
Mm.
However, I can't imagine that the strict Orthodox Jews will allow that either as well.
Probably not.
IVF, yeah. No. That's really mixing the blood, and you don't know whether the matriarchal line will continue.
Well, that's got to be, doesn't it, with the Jewish religion, it is matriarchal. Mm.
So those thousands of people marched last weekend in Tel Aviv to protest against the nation-state bill, which went to a vote on Monday, but I haven't seen the report in today's papers. What has happened?
Well, I didn't see anything in the paper when I was reading it.
Also, you've brought in a little piece of music for us to play.
Oh, yeah. During the week, one of my heartthrobs died. He was 86, died on the 8th of July, born on the 11th of July, actually. And he passed away last week, actually.
At the age of 86?
At the age of 86. And I'm talking about the gorgeous, drop-dead gorgeous Tab Hunter.
Oh.
He was out and proud. He didn't come out while he was out, but he wasn't allowed to be out on when he was in as a movie star.
Oh, as a movie star. He was part of the Hollywood mob.
Oh, my goodness. I just thought he was the most so beautiful-looking man. But the photo of him that I saw on the news at 86, he still looked a very, very handsome man. He appeared in lots and lots of movies. He was a heartthrob for all the women, not knowing that he was gay. It's a bit like Rock Hudson, you know. They all loved him as well. But
he comes up on a Google search of Tab Hunter. Other people to search for includes Rock Hudson.
Yeah, yeah. Tab used to do singing movies as well. He used to sing in the movies and also did, I think, something on Broadway at one stage too. So he's quite a talented man and very good-looking. Beautiful looking.
It comes from the era where multi-talented people got the Guernsey,
yes,
because the studios needed to squeeze every bit out of them because they were money-making machines
lakes. That's right, yeah.
But whether you were male or female, had to be an actor, but you had to be able to dance as well, or in this case, sing, although I'm not sure whether Tab ever had proper singing lessons.
But he has got a very pleasant voice. He has a very pleasant voice.
Oh,
yes. Yes, yes. So why don't we play a little bit of Tab Hunter singing?
Oh, all right then.
Hey, good looking, what you got cooking? How's about cooking some up with me? Hey, sweet baby, don't you think maybe we could find us a brand new recipe. I got a hot rod Ford and a $2 bill. I know a spot right over the hill with soda pop and the dancing is free. So if you want to have fun, come along with me. Hey, hey, good looking, what you got cooking? How's about cooking some up with me?
This Joy program has a podcast and you can subscribe to it at joy.org.au.
You're with Gordon, Phil and Chris. Been there, done that. Joy 94.9. And if we wanted to have communications, we'll have written intercourse with our listener.
Oh, that's a bit of a different intercourse, isn't
well,
it?
Well, I don't know if we can do it. we do actually have an email address.
Oh, well, that might be the easiest way to do it then,
well,
maybe.
Well, throwing pigeons at the studio is frowned upon.
Oh, we've got some out the window.
Yeah, they're the ones who couldn't get away. But being there at joy.org.au is the address at which you can contact us and tell us what we've said wrong, what we've said that pleased you, or just basically praise us or correct us.
Oh,
we've got thick skins.
Right. Have we got some liquid paper to correct us, have we?
I used to use liquid paper, but then I couldn't read the screen anymore.
Oh, couldn't you? Oh,
it
right.
Just got covered in white.
Oh, covered in white again, yeah. Okay, right. That's what I did the other day when I was working in my studio. I gessoed some old paintings, set them white again so I could paint over them.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's a trick that the old masters used to
do. Oh, they used to, yeah, all the old masters. When you realise in the old days the canvases were so damned expensive that they, if they painted something that they didn't like, they'd just paint straight over it. I don't think they even used gesso. I just think they painted straight over.
Hello. What they didn't use?
Gesso, which is a white stuff that covers any other painting that's on your canvas, and it makes it white again so you can paint.
It sounds like the justice system.
Yes, that's probably
make
right.
Make it all white again.
Make it all white again, yeah.
On this day, well, not quite on this day, but on the 1st of July 1937, was introduced in the UK the first telephone emergency system.
Mm.
Now,
I was surprised by that.
Yeah, it's you would have thought that something had been set up earlier than that.
Well, I guess they had local fire station numbers.
Mm.
And if you had an emergency, you'd call your police, ambulance or fire.
But Phil, prior to that, how many telephones would probably be in use in different areas of England? You know, this is another thing, because 1937, they wouldn't be, not every house would have an emergency telephone or a telephone.
No.
You know, it probably they had to wait till they got to a certain level of usage before they could bring this system in.
Yeah, it's all. I don't know the English history of the phone so much, but the Americans had their party lines.
Yes, yeah. Well, we had party
like
lines
like in
here.
Small towns and such, which is, I guess, a mass communication system in itself.
Well, in itself, it was, yes. Yeah.
But in those situations, you actually had to speak to the operator.
The operator to get the number.
All the people who were on the line would have heard the ding on their own phone when someone else had initiated the call, and then they would listen in. And that was the problem, but also a benefit, because everybody listening into that conversation would have heard the teller speaking to the operator, get the ambulance, get the fire brigade, get the police down to such and such, and all the other eavesdroppers, treacle beakers, would have heard the same story and got their asses into gear as well.
Yeah, we didn't have party line when I was growing up but you had to ring the operator to get the number you wanted, but the operator could tell you everything that was going on in the town.
In England, the phone number that they all had to ring for emergencies was 999.
And back in the day,
yes,
the rotary telephone, it would have been just as silly as our 000.
Because it's such
a long
way to
work. Longest dialed number around and has to click all the way back to zero.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So the fire could be out by the time you finish dialing.
Got the phone done.
However, the direct dialing, the digital dialing that we've got at the moment is pretty slick. Slick.
Yes, it does go quick, yeah. But even if they had been dialing 111...
It would have been fairly quick.
It would have been quicker than a hell of a lot quicker than 000.
The current dual tone system uses two frequencies for every number, so it makes it harder to emulate.
Ah, right.
but there was a young man, we'll get back to emergencies in a minute, young man in Northern California called Steve Jobs.
Oh, right, him.
Before his Apple days, he created a black box that you could put up to a public phone and make free long-distance phone calls.
Oh.
Because it emulated all the little codes that the phone company was using.
It was a tone generator.
Yes.
I think I might still have one of my those in my little box of tricks.
Oh, my goodness me.
I should bring that in.
Oh, well, it probably wouldn't work unless you had a landline.
No, well...
Don't know what it would do with mobile.
Yeah, that's what I'm getting at. Yes. Yeah. It's a wonderful thing because that was an emergency service. But what have we got these days with emergency services, which are so much more advanced?
Melbourne just got a new toy, what, last week?
Yeah. Well, they tested it to the city residents.
I didn't hear
and
it.
And occupants at the time. Mm. I was travelling down Collins Street in a tram at the time, midday last Tuesday, the 10th of July, when they did a citywide
emergency alert.
And I think most of us have already experienced the building evacuation systems in high-rise buildings.
Yep.
Well, this was broadcast to the streets. So there are now speakers up and down every street in the CBD. And it's loud enough that everybody can hear it, but it's not boomy because they've got speakers very close together. So you don't get that echo.
Chris, what's the sort of sound, though? Is it a whoop-whoop? I just wonder whether they were sort of somebody speaking or something, rather.
Once again, there's a unified signal. That one signal means the same thing within buildings and outside buildings as well.
All right.
So it's like we have the fire test for a city building.
Well, we've had them here from time.
Now we've got a fire test for the streets of the city.
Oh, right, right. Because I don't only come into the city once a week, basically.
So I don't know what the police would say, but Phil, you've had experience in other cities where they've got alarm systems as well.
Yeah, in Hawaii they have the tsunami warning test first Saturday of every month, and it just echoes through all these high-rise hotels. Yeah, it's nice to know that, A, somebody's watching out, and, B, that they'd tell others about it instead of sitting up there in their ivory towers saying, oh, those people are going to get wet.
They don't have a volcano warning, though, do they? Well, like they wouldn't
well it's
need
going
one.
Most of the time.
You wouldn't need one, would you, with a thing going off
But
like
those
that.
People losing their houses bought that land knowing that it couldn't be insured. So... I guess that's why none of them are really surprised that the house is gone.
We really need those sort of emergency services because sometimes things happen where you actually need to get the streets cleared or you've got to do something, you know, and it's wisest to have them. Yeah.
Well, on that very same island in Hawaii, the Big Island, they had a tsunami back in 1960.
Yeah.
And it took out, it sort of came into a bay and just scooped the whole town back out to sea.
Oh, did it really?
So, yeah, it's quite catastrophic.
Yeah. Well, look at what it did up in Thailand and all those when that they had the tsunami up there. So you really do need those sort of warnings.
Yes.
For the people.
Had a boyfriend in Hawaii, and he called me once to say the salami alarm went off. The tsunami alarm went off, and you know, all his friends were, you know, headed to higher ground, which is very close in Honolulu, just up to the hills.
Yeah.
And he was staying or living on the 8th floor, so he figured he'd stay home.
Stay home and watch
it. They measured the tsunami when it hit Waikiki, and it was about half an inch.
Yeah, it hadn't, didn't, that was the one.
But
that,
a lot of them fizzle out.
That did fizzle out, yeah.
In the times when there were threats of atomic bombs being dropped, and I suppose modernly, if there were missiles going to be launched in your general direction, it would be an opportunity to broadcast a collective duck.
The American training in schools was duck and cover. So you've got a nuclear bomb heading your way. You're going to get under the little wooden table.
Yeah, get under your school tables. Yes, that was the old thing, wasn't it? But it doesn't work like that, of course. You don't even have to be anywhere near it to be affected by it because of the radiation and the what have you that floats around in the air.
But while I was living in California, they were trying to come up with an earthquake alarm. And there is a time... They claim it's like a pre-shock wave.
Oh, right, right.
And the story is that animals and birds can sense that and head for the hills. I don't know if they actually got far with it, but I do recall the advice was before we had our big earthquake, in the event of an earthquake, stand in a doorway.
Yes.
Because that's the maximum...
The strongest
part of the frame there will protect you.
Mm-hmm.
straight after the earthquake, they corrected that to say, don't do that, because the earthquake makes your house move, and people were getting their fingers broken when the door slammed shut.
Oh, dear.
So, yes.
They didn't think of that, did they?
Well, the earthquakes are so few and far apart that if that lesson had been learnt 50 years ago, obviously they didn't write it down.
Perhaps their fingers were broken.
Yeah, but our emergency services are something that we really, really do need in today's modern society.
In fact, going home last Friday, just on the walk up to the tram stop, there was a woman there who had obviously fallen over.
Yes.
And she'd been picked up and put on a seat, and this guy was just holding her shoulder. And I thought, oh, there's always a policeman. It's just near the corner of Burke and Swanson Street.
Mm-hmm.
And I figured, there's always a policeman around. I'll go find somebody. Before I could take two steps, the mobile paramedic on his motorbike pulled up right beside her.
Wow.
So I assume he'd been called.
He'd been called,
but,
yes.
But you often see him in Burke Street.
Yes.
Mm. The other problem with these sort of announcements is that it might induce panic.
But it could do.
Or the opposite. You're just so used to hearing the alarm during the test.
You take no notice of it.
Mm. You think, oh, well, that's just another test. Or, you know, you don't become alarmed.
Mm. Golly gosh.
Nothing's perfect.
No.
Yeah, but what happens when you go through somewhere and it says, this door is alarmed?
That's why they should have got a braver door. Yeah. What's it scared of?
That's what I think so too.
Karen Ramirez.
Ramirez.
Ramirez?
Ramirez. I think is probably the word you're trying to say.
Oh, really?
Like Menendez.
Yes.
Although she didn't kill her parents. Those Menendez boys weren't very nice.
She's looking for love.
We all are. No, we're not. I've got mine.
Wow. You're on Joy 94.9. Chris, Phil and Gordon.
Love radio? Joy is now on iHeartRadio. Take us with you anywhere.
You're with Chris, Gordon and Phil. Been there, done that. Joy 94.9.
Yeah, we've been there.
I got my tongue tangled.
Now, we started off the program talking about the wonderful way that you can get married now in the Uniting Church here in Australia. But something dreadful happened up in Indonesia.
Well, in the part of Indonesia where they
up in Aceh.
Have a strict religious overlay over and above the normal law of the land.
Yeah.
And they have the church law, which is known as Sharia law.
Sharia law, yeah, that's right, yes.
And they seem to
they're very
be
strict.
Against anything and everything.
That's right, they seem to be. They don't seem to have any fun or what have you in that law, do they? When you read about what they get charged with and all the rest of it.
But they manage to breed. Yeah, you'd think that'd be against the law.
Yeah, well, you would have thought so. Yeah, but that keeps them going.
No, but the province that they are in is called Aceh, A-C-E-H, and it's the only Indonesian province to enforce such Islamic law.
That's right.
And there's a little bit of a fear that if, in fact, their influence spreads, then instead of being a gentle interpretation of
Muslim law.
Muslim law, as Indonesia is, then it's going to be a much severer one.
Well, Chris, they are trying to get that in down further down to into the city. There's a lot of people that have been trying to advocate for the Sharia law to come into it by electing people into the government who agreed with it.
Well, one of the things I love doing is flogging people, using a whip to cross the back of the so-called offenders.
So they're not putting them on eBay?
Well, no.
I'm not trying to flog them off to the highest bid.
No.
And it's not one of those ones where you say, oh, yes, I'm enjoying that.
And what they had been doing as well is actually making it a public event.
Yeah.
That was a nationwide law. You don't do it in public. But in April, RJ passed a law to
be able to do it.
Yeah.
Hmm.
It's rather brutal.
Hmm.
The recent one that I've referred to is the fact of flogging a couple of men who were accused of having homosexual sex. Now, there's a few steps in the process of identifying that the fact they are that, but I'm sure it's a process that is liable to misinterpretation. And if you hated a couple of people, I'm sure you could get them sorted.
The other crimes people were flogged for were drinking and selling alcohol.
Yeah.
And this is a really bad one, showing affection in public.
Whoa.
Hmm.
Who would want to live within cooey of that law?
Well, I mean, even if they were interested in soccer, any of the soccer players,
they wouldn't be able to touch one another on the bum, would they?
Oh.
As they ran past, kicking a goal, played.
Or congratulating each other
with
at the
a
end
hug
of the
or
match.
A kiss, yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
I tell you what, there was a lot of hugging and kissing going on in the football.
That's the opposite of show love. Love rules.
That's right. I don't think they show love in the ordinary way. It's one of those places, but it's just beggars belief that people could believe that they can cure somebody of being gay by whipping them.
I don't think they're after a cure. They're just to make, or I think the quote was, hopefully the flogging we're witnessing today will serve as a lesson for people not to violate Sharia law, the Bandar Aceh official said.
Yeah.
That's not the way to learn.
Not the way to earn respect, anyhow.
But the Sharia, that's like they don't want to educate girls either, do they?
Well, some countries have got a form of Sharia law do that, and probably even driving cars.
It's probably like a lot of these religious things that they have their own ways of interpreting the law of what they want done.
But you've still got to remind these people this is 2018.
Yeah, but they still don't live in 2018.
Well, clearly.
Philip, they live way back in the start of the
Dark Ages.
Yeah, well, right.
Does appear to be oppression of women by the majority by men.
Oh yeah, well that's why most religions were started, I think, to get so that men had control, because in the very olden days it was mostly all matriarchal societies. You know, the women were in control of everything because the men were having to go out and fight and find food. It's similar to the indigenous society here in Australia, but because when you think way back into the days before they had Christianity, the women would be the ones that had the insight into what was going on in the world and all this sort of thing, you know. But that was completely kiboshed once they started bringing in religion.
Because they spend all day on the phone telling gossip.
That's right. But it was the whole change of society when they brought in all the written down, like the New Testament, the Old Testament, and that sort of stuff.
Well, it's Pride season in the Northern Hemisphere, and of course those parades and demonstrations are part of the breaking down of attitudes and barriers to general acceptance.
That's right.
Now,
in
Russia, you can't do that.
Oh, no.
You can't have a gay parade. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. And I don't know that in Aceh you would, but I understand that in Jakarta and a couple of those bigger cities, the huge, they've been able to have gay parades.
Yeah. But talking about, you mentioned Russia just a while ago, there was some big thing about somebody was singing out homophobic slurs at the football, and they were going to look into that in Russia. You know, they're really hard down on the gay community in Russia as well. But they're still having their gay pride marches all around the Northern Hemisphere and still having wonderful times.
And beautiful weather.
And they have had great weather, yeah.
And in fact, I would have to say that Fred Nile has had no influence at all.
No, not at all. But they had
they had, climate change was beating everybody.
That's right. But see, in Glasgow for climate Pride March, they had Nicola Sturgeon, who was the Chief Minister of Scotland. She led the parade.
Wow.
She's the first person to lead a country to lead a gay and lesbian Pride March. Good on her. She's a wonderful woman. She speaks her mind. Boy, does she ever.
Strong opinions held by a Scottish person?
Yes.
Is this possible?
Oh, golly. Well, look at what they did. They didn't want to be part of England at the beginning, did they?
Well, they still don't.
They still don't, actually, yeah. And they were the great friends of the French, of course, which upset the English very much as well. Yeah. You know, Scottish people have always been very, very...
They swap their affections around frequently.
Yes, that's true. But then they had to realise that they couldn't beat the English at the time, so they had to join them, yeah. Especially when the king became the King of England.
Yeah.
James the Sixth became James the First or something.
They inherited their king.
That's right, yes, yeah.
But on the weekend, just gone, there is an event that is gathering a little bit of...
Recognition,
yes.
Because I'd never heard of it, I must admit.
And it's the most Wuthering Heights Day ever is sort of celebrated on, I think, the third weekend in July.
So that would have been about the 14th of July then, would here in Australia, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, well, the weekend just gone.
Yeah, well, that's right. Yes, it is too.
Yeah. Mm. And I didn't see any reports of a parade or an assembly or anything.
I did. I saw it on telly.
Oh, right.
They had it on television. I think I can't remember whether it was Saturday morning or Saturday evening or something or other, but there was all these people dressed in red. And they were all having a wonderful picnics and barbecues and all sorts of things. And they sort of said it was Wuthering Heights Day. And I thought, what the hell's that? I had to admit, I had never heard of it.
Well, this is where a song is recognised through its video format more than its oral format.
Well, it says they recreate the music video. I don't actually recall
the music video. I haven't seen the video either.
Oh, well, she's in this red wispy frock.
Yes.
And she's waltzing around on the hillside sort of thing and doing all these sweepy ballet moves.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like a rip-off of Sound of Music.
Well, not quite. but the wispy frock gets them every time. There's one held here last year in Edinburgh Gardens in North Fitzroy.
That's right. I think that's where this one was.
Again, this year, I think. Might have been a reflection.
Yeah, it could have been. Yeah, I couldn't remember where they was doing it from, but everybody seemed to be having a wonderful time. And of course, everybody's screaming about Kate Bush, of course, and the song. The whole thing comes from that wonderful book by Emily Bronte,
yes.
Wuthering Heights. Yes. Here's Kate.
Joy, out, loud, proud.
You can find more Joycasts and show blogs. Go to joy.org.au.
You're with Gordon, Phil and Chris. Been there, done that. Joy 94.9. Have you regained your composure after waltzing around on the hilltop in your red dress?
Oh, my God. Watching that, I just didn't realise how stupid it looked.
The guy with the smoke machine.
Oh, it was out in the paddock with some trees behind it. And it was, to me, it looked so stupid.
I think that's the whole thing. It's an opportunity to send up the whole song.
I think it must have, because she was going through skating moves in the grass and she was doing all sorts of weird and wonderful things. Yeah.
She might have just let the music carry her away. Which they should really have literally done.
I like the song, but I don't like the video, I must admit. I think the song is very clever. Yeah. And of course, she lived on it for years and years and years.
Yes, with Kathy and Heathcliff.
Yeah, Heathcliff, yes. He was the heartthrob of the thing there.
On the 19th of July, 1799, the Rosetta Stone was discovered. It was one of those big world mysteries, holding the key to unlock the secrets of ancient Egyptian hieroglyphics.
That's a beautiful piece of stone. It's purple marble, actually, is what it, what it's a great big piece of purple marble. Well, it's not a very big piece, but it's in the Victoria and Albert Museum in London. Anybody can see it. It's just there. And you wonder what it is, because it held the key to working out what was actually happening in Egypt in the olden days, in the way back centuries
very
ago.
Sneaky. This, on this particular stone was the same sort of story represented in three different scripts. Not in English, no, they hadn't invented that at that stage. It was Greek, Egyptian hieroglyphics, and Demotic Egyptian. Now, the Greek passage stated certain things. It stated that all three scripts were identical in meaning. And because the Greek was well known, the stone was the key to deciphering the hieroglyphics, that a language that had been thought to be dead for quite some couple of centuries, a couple of thousand years, millennia.
But the man that worked out that the whole story that in the Greek section was what was being done in the hieroglyphics opened up the whole of the thing, so that when people went into the tombs of all these people, they could actually read what was going on. So he opened up that whole aspect of it.
But the guy figured it out 25 years after they found the stone.
That's right. Yeah, that took 25 years for somebody to figure it out. Had today's modern technology, they probably would have fixed it up in a few seconds.
What was it though? Was it the something to decode what's painted on the walls or etched on the walls?
All the tombs. What was discovered in the tombs couldn't be read until there was an unlocking code, until they deciphered. And using the Greek to determine the language was
the 25 years after they found the stone and the chap worked out that the Greek story was exactly the same written in the hieroglyphics and the Greek and the Demotic language, they were able then to sort of say, well, those hieroglyphs meant this, so that then they could go into the tombs and read exactly what was in the tombs.
And glyph, of course, is a representation.
So rather than writing words, they drew pictures. Yeah.
The big question is, why? If the ancient Egyptians were trying to tell their story to future generations, why decode it or why code it? Well, why not just say it?
Talk about that space piece of space junk that went past all the planets and left our universe or our solar system heading its way. Just imagine what anybody discovering that would think of two naked objects standing there. What on earth are they doing?
Okay,
we had
our high tech LP record etched on it. Yeah. If they ever figure out how to play that.
Yeah, that's going to be fun, isn't it?
But see, that's to explain ourselves. Are you saying this stone...
That's what the Egyptians were explaining about the king's life and what had been happening or what was in the tombs, because most of these big tombs that they found were the tombs of royalty. And so that they could work out who they were called and what they were, you know, and all this sort of business by once they worked out what the Rosetta Stone was and what it was saying, they could then interpret that back onto the walls of the tombs of everything, and then they could work out who was what and why and where. And
you'd think they could have done more than one stone.
But even the modern Egyptians didn't know this language. This is the point, you see, because they knew about the things there, but they didn't know what it meant, because it had been buried for so long. Things had changed, and I think they by then the Egyptians had learned about three or four different languages, because the Greeks were there and the Arabians were there and all the rest of it. You know, so I think that's possibly, I'm just surmising here, that that's possibly why
they should have done a video instead.
I should have think so. had them dancing around in the sand in a red dress.
Well, I have some technology at home. It was a one-hit wonder. It was a very short-lived form of technology called a mini disc.
All right.
It was digital recording, but it was digital fidelity. didn't have any scratch or whisper or hiss or anything like that. And it was compact and it was pretty good. It wasn't like the old cassettes, which had a little thin tape that fell out and got mangled, or some of the modern things. But it was an early precursor to what Monsieur Apple got out with his iPod.
Yeah, the iPod's just a player, though. The mini disc you could actually record on. But it was essentially a victim of its timing.
Yeah.
It turned into a solution to a problem that never turned up. And then the CD came out with a very high capacity for music storage.
Yeah.
And really the poor Sony, because they were the only ones who bothered to make it, had to sort of swallow their pride and say, oh, well, we'll get them next time.
We failed on that one. We'll do something else, yeah.
Dear oh dear, technology does tend to move.
Look at the time.
Oh, it is. It's, yes, coming close to the end of this little show.
Goodness, where did that hour go?
No, not quite this hour so far.
Oh, well, we've got a bit more.
Is there anything else we should perhaps mention? Talk about technology being out of date, but sometimes you've got to name things.
Oh, well, yes.
And the name continues on and on and on.
Well, it wasn't. This place wasn't called that until this man said it.
On the 14th of July, 1814, the book in which Matthew Flinders proposed the name of Terraris Australis for the southern continent is actually published. It had been written on maps, but it was a great southern land, and that's what Terra Australis means. That was a general descriptor of the landmass, and you couldn't keep always calling it the great unknown land, or like New Zealand, the land of the white crowd. Yeah. Although if you were Kiwi, you could call it that.
Te Aroa.
Yeah. Hmm. However, Matthew Flinders proposed that Terra Australis actually been abbreviated and became Australia. The name officially adopted in 1824, and his book was published 10 years earlier, sort of making it the way to go.
The Terra is just terra firma.
Terra firma. Being land, ground. Land. Yeah, nobody knew what to call it. New South Wales was the whole half of the Australian continent on the east coast.
So that's where Westfield named their shopping towns.
That's right, yeah.
Northland, Eastland, Southland, imaginative.
Yep. And then WA was sort of New Holland, because they thought that was part of, that's what they called it, because the Dutch were the first people there, yeah.
That's where they built the first Dutch oven.
Is it?
I don't know.
We won't go there. No. Thank you very much indeed.
Keep that under the streets.
Yes. Okay, it is time, Gordon and Phil, and dear listener. And, look, thank you, Nina, for your Joy membership. Much appreciated.
Oh, good on you, Nina. Yeah. Cupcake. Lovely. And cupcake.
That's right.
Gorgeous cupcake.
And
still creating havoc, I bet.
Oh, I'm sure. In a nice way.
Nice way, yeah. All right, well, we just say what?
We'll say cheerio. Cheerio and bye for now.
I'm singing the Mickey Mouse Club closing theme.
What was that?
I'm not going to sing
it. M-I-C.
See you real soon.
See you real soon.
K-E-Y. Why? Because we love you.
I don't think we'll go there.
No.
Cheerio for now.
Bye for now.
Bye.
Joy 94.9 in Melbourne. Joy.org.au for the world.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.